Hello, and welcome to the Winding Roads Companion Podcast. I am your host, Catherine Lewiston, and I'm so pleased to have with me in the studio, Joan Myers. Joan, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I'd love to. First of all, thank you for having me. And like you said, my name is Joan Myers, and I am the owner of Created to Give, and I make pottery.
Amazing. And how long have you been making work under the name Created to Give?
Just over 2 years.
Okay.
And so I've been actually, I took my very first pottery lesson not quite 4 years ago.
Incredible. Okay. So tell us a little bit more about that journey. Like, what were you doing pre-pottery?
Yeah.
And like, what has that been like?
Yeah. So my entire career, I have worked in corporate America.
Okay.
And 4 years ago, this coming fall, late summer, early fall, I walked away. And I didn't know what I was going to do, if anything.
Yeah.
And so I didn't want to do nothing. And so I was just searching for things to do to, you know, take a lesson here, learn something new there. And I somehow found pottery. And so I took my first lesson in September of that year.
Wow. That's and, so cool.
Yeah. And so at first, you know, very candidly, I did not love it.
Really?
I did not.
Oh, my gosh. I really want to dive into this a little bit, right?
Yeah, because, you know, I did not take anything like this in high school like a lot of people did. I went to a private school, and we didn't have all these opportunities for arts and things like that. And so the first time that I have ever worked with clay was literally almost, you know, it's going on 4 years now.
Wow.
And so when I took that first class, I didn't naturally love it.
Yeah.
In fact, I was more leaning on the side of I was going to do this because I couldn't do it.
Okay.
I couldn't center clay.
Mm.
And I'm more of a type A personality where I am a perfectionist and I'm going to get it done. I'm going to learn it. I'm going to do the best of my ability. And I couldn't do this.
Yeah.
And it frustrated me a lot.
Mm-hmm.
A lot.
So you're like, I'll show this clay.
Yeah. That's exactly it.
Wow.
And so I took the same beginner's class 3 times until the people at the studio wouldn't let me enroll in that same class again.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep, true story. And so that's how it all started. And then I, when I couldn't take the class again, I bought a membership to the studio, and I went in every single day, and I threw the exact same piece 4 times every day until I could do it.
That's so cool. Joan, the tenacity of this story. I just love it because I think so often we have this story of art coming from this like very, I don't know, organic sort of like, oh, I've always considered myself an artist kind of like vibe.
Not me.
And this is, this is like such a, I think this is such a wonderful perspective to have.
Thank you.
Because there are so many people who pick up something artistic, maybe as a hobby, and then they're not good at it right away, and they're like, oh, well, I guess it's not for me.
Well, I sucked at it.
Yeah.
I did.
Yeah.
I sucked.
Okay.
But now I love it. I do it. That's what I do.
So what can you pinpoint like a fork in the road or a turning point or like an aha moment? Where, you know, because like so many people, if you were going to invest money and time into taking a class and then you were like, well, gosh, I'm just not very good at this right now. And so maybe it's not something that I'm going to do. What made you want to continue?
I got to the point where I could actually center clay on the wheel.
Okay.
And I could consistently make a wine chiller.
Amazing.
And at that point, I had a lot of wine chillers that really weren't wine chillers.
Yeah.
And that's when I really started to think that if I wanted to continue to do this, I had to start to sell it. Because I had to, you get a lot of it, right?
Yeah.
And so you have to do something. So if you're not going to, you've only got so many, I only have so many family and friends that only like so many wine chillers. And so then I had to start to sell it. So then I started to really think about it. Differently, I guess, not more, just differently.
Yeah.
In that if I really wanted to do this, if I truly, enjoyed it, loved it as much as I felt I did at that time, I mm-hmm. had to do something different.
Yeah.
And so that's when I, took a couple weeks and I stepped back and I really thought it through. And it's like, yes, I do. I do want to do this.
Yeah.
And so I started to make things other than wine chillers at that mm-hmm. point. And people were liking what I was making. Mm. It wasn't necessarily like the end result that I was going for or that I had rolling around in my head.
Sure.
But it was still at the point where people were liking what I was creating.
Okay.
And so then, when you're in a shared studio, everyone is making stuff all the time. So there's a lot going on, a lot of pieces that need to go through the firing mm-hmm. and the glazing and everything. And you don't have the freedom, I guess is the right word, to pick out your own colored glazes because you use sure. what the studio has.
Yeah, yeah.
Or fire when you need to fire or mm-hmm. have, maybe it's only a half a kiln, but you yeah. need them pieces for something. Mm-hmm. And so that's when I decided that I needed to venture off on my own and, really go all in if I was going to try this because yeah. I needed that freedom to be able to, sure. the ebb and flow of it. I needed more control over that.
Yeah, yeah, the flexibility and the autonomy
yeah.
is so important.
Yeah, so I don't know if there was like a hard point. It was kind of like a slow realization.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was in my face, I needed to do this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, that's so cool. I'm hearing like this balance of sort of your work and effort to become good at this skill and then receiving that external validation. So you have that like internal feeling of like, this is something that I want to do. It's something that yeah. I want to get good at. And then you have this external validation down the line of people being like, oh,
yeah,
yeah, like what you're yeah. doing is really cool. Do you find that you change what you make more based on like your internal compass? Or do you look at what other people are saying like, oh, that's really cool, like make more of that, and do you go in that direction?
No, it's more me.
Okay.
Yeah. I jokingly tell people at art fairs and stuff, but I'm really serious. I am my target audience.
Yeah. And so more people should have that mindset, I think.
I mean, if you like what I like, we're golden.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
if you don't, you're not gonna like my
great.
Stuff.
Great. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm totally good with that.
Uh-huh.
And so what that's done for me is that over time I found that I really like texture.
Mm.
And so I incorporate texture on almost every piece I make in some way.
Yeah.
And that has, I found that a lot of people really like that. And yeah. that's been more like probably the past year, maybe year and a half, that I've really been, incorporating that in different ways. So it's not always the same. Mm-hmm. So I started out by just not glazing the rim, like on a planter.
Sure.
So you'd have just a little bit of natural stone.
Mm-hmm.
Now I actually carve and keep a whole strip or something mm-hmm. of natural stone.
Oh, wow.
Versus having everything fully glazed.
Yeah.
And I think that is, I think it's either black and white. You either like it or you don't.
Sure.
And I'm okay with that. Because, like I said, I do stuff that I like, that right. I would personally buy.
Yeah.
And I try to make things that can be dressed up or dressed down,
mm-hmm.
That have, they can be bold,
sure.
but they can be a supporting piece as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to stick
it's
with...
It's a hard line.
It is. Yeah. And like I said, I am a perfectionist. Mm-hmm. And so I set pretty high standards for mm-hmm. myself, and I don't always make them.
Sure.
But yeah. It is what it is. But I think it is starting to resonate with more and more people because I'm hearing, like, especially this last summer at art fairs, I hear multiple times people tell me that I color outside the lines or I march to a beat of a different drum.
Yeah.
Or you're the first potter that doesn't actually have, all mugs.
Right.
Or
right.
stuff like that, because I don't yeah. make hardly any mugs. I mean, I do make yeah. some, but not very many.
That's a super valuable place to be as a ceramicist, is the one not making the mugs.
Right?
Right, because, yeah, I mean, through this podcast, I'm going to be talking to a lot of different ceramicists. And and I mean, for good reason, one of the easiest things to batch is a coffee mug, right? And and that is also something that people will generally collect and have a lot of. So, you know, it makes perfect sense that there would be.
And I'm one of them. I got a lot of mugs.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, you know, I'm such a, I am definitely a mug girl. I love my little collection.
Yeah.
And especially when they're hand thrown, they're handmade. I can.
They make you feel good.
Right. And just being able to like look into my cupboard and say like, oh, that's the one I got at this art fair this year by this artist. Right.
Yeah.
It's super special, but it is very, maybe smart, maybe fortuitous that you are sort of like outside of that a little bit.
Well, I don't know about that so much. Like what you were saying is collecting mugs. I do that as well.
Yeah.
And I love to buy new mugs all the time.
Uh-huh.
I just don't like to be the one making my own mugs.
Right.
Because I like that feeling too, that when I'm drinking my coffee out of a mug that somebody else made. Like that's pretty cool. I like that. So,
oh, that's very cool. Truly, I am going to use the what you just said of like I am my own target audience as a mantra. Like I'm gonna put that on a post-it note, put it on my mirror. That's such good life advice. That's one of the reasons why I love doing this podcast, because I like hear just the absolutely brilliant things that come out of all of these artists' mouths, and I'm like, oh yes, that's a life lesson for me right now.
Yeah.
So cool. So I would love to hear more about like you mentioned texture being something that you're playing with. You know, what else draws you to ceramics, to pottery? What is it about that process that kind of keeps you coming back?
I am the type of person where I need to be continually learning, growing, and be challenged. And this is all of that.
Yeah.
Like I haven't even tipped the corner of an iceberg as far as like making my own glazes.
Right.
You know, I've just started getting interested in potentially blending multiple clay bodies into one piece.
Sure.
And I haven't like I haven't even touched any of that.
Yeah.
And I know that there's so much involved with all of that. And I'm really a fan of matte glazes versus glossy.
Okay.
But I don't have like the first, I don't even know where to start, how to make my own matte glazes that are food safe, that are, you know, all that kind of stuff that you want to keep in mind, because that's really important to me, that, you know, the pieces that I make are not only functional, but that they're usable every day.
Yeah.
Right? And that means they have to be food safe. They have to be, you know, able to go in the microwave, the dishwasher, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so, like, for me, sticking on the safe side right now, I buy my glaze, right?
Yeah.
But I would love to be able to make it. And so, you know, just thinking about all of that, that's, you know, that keeps my mind going. And then, like, the clay itself, you know, trying to make, over time, bigger pieces, different pieces. Like, I like to kind of try to defy gravity with the pieces that I make. And I fail more than I succeed right now.
Yeah.
But that keeps me going.
Uh-huh.
Kind of like when I couldn't center clay. It's like, gosh darn it.
I'm going to defy gravity.
I'm going to do this. You know, so, you know, thinking of things like that.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's my mind is going all the time, learning and trying to, you know, make things better. Even, you know, something that I make a lot, like a bowl. Right? Big, like, I call them island bowls. Like, if you have an island, the big bowls.
Yep.
I don't make those on the wheel. I make those by hand.
Uh-huh.
And so, like, even something like that, well, how can I get, like, the foot of the bowl to still be a foot like you need to be, right? But to make it different.
Yeah.
So it's not just a foot, right? Something like that. And that's not always as easy either, because the bowls are not level.
Right.
I intentionally don't make them level.
Uh-huh.
So to have a foot that's not a true foot like you typically see, it just adds to the complexity. And that kind of stuff drives me, because it's not going to be as simple. I mean, in the end, it looks so easy, right? But to get there, it's a challenge, and it keeps my mind going, and it, mm-hmm. you know, so that's the kind of thing that keeps me going every day.
That's awesome. That's so cool. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that I love about ceramics, and like I have done a little bit of work. Mm-hmm. I have dabbled in ceramics, just very casually, but it is amazing how, you know, you look at this like a static piece, like a bowl, mm-hmm. after it's been fired, after mm-hmm. the whole thing's been done, and it's, you know, balanced and mm-hmm. it stands up on its own and it doesn't move, mm-hmm. right? And then you think about how malleable and flexible that initial material is.
Yeah.
And yeah, sometimes when you see ceramic pieces that are just like almost like bursting out of their own skins, it's wild to think about the physics involved in keeping that piece in shape while it's drying and bisque firing and glaze firing. I mean, it's really incredible. And there are so many variables and so many places where stuff can go wrong. I'm also hearing in what you're describing this going back to the idea of autonomy and flexibility and agency, right? This idea of like, okay, well, right now I'm buying my glazes, but how could I have a little bit more like input and control over that process by mixing my own mm-hmm. and then still making a viable product? I think that's really cool. Mm-hmm. So how many years have you participated in the Winding Roads Art Tour?
This is my first.
This is my first. That's awesome. Very cool. And so tell us a little bit how you got involved. Like, did you kind of knock on the door? Did somebody come up to you? Like, what was that process like?
I have, for the past 2 years, been at the Driftless Art Fair in Soldiers Grove.
What a beautiful art fair.
Yeah. And so over the couple of times I've been there, I've met more and more people. Mm-hmm. And I've this was my second year also at the Artisan Alley pop-up here in Viroqua next to the Temple Theater. Mm-hmm. And so through those two things and the people that I've met, the other artists that I've met, mm-hmm. several of them actually have brought this up.
Cool.
And so I thought, well, I might as well just check it out and see what it is. And so that's how I learned about it.
That's awesome. That's so cool. I think there are a lot of longstanding artists here in this mm-hmm. community and in the Winding Roads Art Tour sort of portfolio, I guess I'll say, for lack of a better word. Like, there are a lot of people who have done it for many years.
Okay.
Kind of through the evolution of the tour, you know, like pre-pandemic and like all of that stuff. And so me being new to the area and being new to the Winding Roads Art Tour as the social media manager, it is always interesting to listen to the stories of how artists become involved.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think there can be a bit of a perceived barrier if you know, like, Kathy Wheeler, for instance, who's been an artist in this community for such a long time and is really like a staple member of the community, or Maureen Carlstadt or somebody like that. It can feel a little intimidating maybe sometimes to be like, ooh, can I join? So I think it's really cool that you got, you know, invited into, you know, people mentioned it to you, people saw your work and they were like, hey,
you should
think about this. Yeah. I think that's really like beautiful and friendly.
Yeah, very nice. This area that we live in is just, you know, I tell my son all the time, all you got to do is talk to people.
Uh-huh. I have found that to be true.
Just talk to people.
Yep. Yeah. I haven't even been here a year. And I don't know, I've just made so many friends.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
Yeah, we live in a very, very kind area.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit back to your creative process. When you are making work, do you find that your creative process is kind of like consistent over periods of time? Do you find that it ebbs and flows? Do you find that you like to work at night, for instance, or only in the mornings, or like what's your process like? Take us into your studio.
I think the only consistency I have is I am a morning person.
Okay.
So I'm out there usually before 7 I work about 6 days a week at it.
Okay.
And time just flies. So yeah. I'm out there usually 6:30-ish in the summertime when it's lighter, maybe quarter after six. But wow. Wintertime, maybe it's about seven. But anyway, it's morning. Mm-hmm. Depending on what I'm doing, I might go for a walk in the middle of the morning if I need something to dry a little bit. Mm-hmm. I like that freedom to be able to do that. I try to always get a walk in. So sometimes if I'm on the wheel and throwing and I haven't gotten my walk in, then I got to stop what I'm doing and go for my walk, right? But I am probably, other than a morning person, the most inconsistent potter.
Sure.
Because I'm a one-man band, right? And so every morning I think about what I'm going to do that day, and then I go out there and it's like, well, I can't do that because I don't have room, right? So I'm only, you know, I can only do so much, and I have to keep things moving because I don't have a huge studio to, you know, to store all of these pieces that haven't been even fired yet because they'll break.
Do you have your own kiln, or do you send out? Okay, ooh, lovely.
Yep, so I have that all out there. But anyway, because I am, you know, flying solo with all of this, I usually, whenever I throw, I try to throw, like, a whole day. So I get a lot of pieces.
Okay.
And then depending on year and whether I've got the big door open, you know, whatever, things dry at different speeds.
Yeah.
But usually then in, you know, the next day or so, I've got to trim everything.
Right. So you sort of batch.
I batch, but not the same types of pieces. Like,
sure. You phase.
Yeah.
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 Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. And then it will fire, and then I'm throwing more, and then I glaze, and I'm throwing more. So I try to do a little bit of everything every day to keep everything moving.
Sure.
But it really kind of depends on where I'm at and if I've got a show coming up or if I've got, you know, I do some classes, and so if got some of those coming up, I, you know, I gotta get things ready.
You like host classes? You teach classes?
For charcuterie boards.
Ooh,
yes,
fun.
I do.
Nice.
Yeah.
How does a person get involved or sign up for one of your classes?
A person would go to my website.
Amazing. And what is that website? You gotta plug yourself.
It's createdtogive.net.
And that's the number two.
It's a number two.
Okay.
Yes.
Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. That's cool.
Yeah.
So are those like half day, full day?
2 hours.
2 hours.
Yeah, because it's a process. I don't ask people to come back after each firing to do the different things. So, you know, they're there on the first day and they get the clay and we roll it out and they carve it and then they look through all of my colors that they have. And I show them different pieces of, you know, how I can glaze it, you know, with an ombre, with a clean line, with a mixture, you know, all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And then they pick their colors and they kind of draw it out and tell me the colors that they want it. And then after that, then I take it the rest of the way for them.
Gotcha.
While it's drying and I clean them up and then through the firing and I glaze them and then they get them back.
Oh, that's so, very cool. Wow. Yeah. How often do you do those classes?
I've got one. Well, I've done them October through now. March is my last one that's on the calendar. But I've got one private session on the calendar.
Oh, okay.
And then I've got another one coming up. So the ones that I put on the calendar are free, but if there's something like with a different number of people or a specific date or time, then people reach out directly, and then we kind of figure it out from
there. Gotcha. Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah.
That's really neat. I think there is, every artist has a different feeling about their studio space.
Yeah.
And whether it's a private space or a public space.
Yeah.
And so it's always fun to hear how people see their spaces and like whether they readily invite people in or whether it's just like their sort of sanctum, you know?
Yeah.
Come
on
in. That's really cool. That's awesome. That's very cool. Wonderful. Well, I have had such a good time talking with you today, Joan. It's been really, really lovely. Do you have any last words? Anything? I mean, we're sitting out here. We're sitting in the studio. It's cozy, but it is a blizzard outside. And it's sometimes hard to think about June.
Yeah.
You know, and like how things are going to be green again.
Yeah.
Probably when we like see each other next.
Right.
But yeah. Do you have any last words on this blizzardy February day?
I'm a summer gal.
Yeah.
So this isn't my cup of tea.
Sure.
But I'm working hard to embrace all four seasons, which is super hard for me.
Oh, yeah.
But spring is right around the corner.
Absolutely.
And I'm so grateful to have met you.
Yes.
Thank you for this time.
It's been so lovely.
Yeah. And I'm really looking forward to being on this tour.
Oh, wonderful. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Joan.
Thank you.